It's May 11th, 2016, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, the highest figure of internally displaced people ever recorded is reported. We look at reasons for Turkey to put a military base in Qatar. Bullying may be an even worse problem than we thought. And singer Justin Timberlake releases a new single.
The wait is over. It's been 3 years since Justin Timberlake gave us any new music, and he's back now. But he's only back with a song on a film soundtrack.
It's all on today's International Edition. An independent humanitarian agency said today the number of internally displaced people in the world, called IDPs, has reached nearly 41 million, the highest figure ever recorded. The non-governmental organization Norwegian Refugee Council's Internal Displacement Monitoring Center released a global report that said more than half fled their homes due to conflict or natural disaster as of 2015, with nearly 9 million uprooted just in the past year. And more than 50% of those became internal refugees in three countries, Yemen, Syria, and Iraq. Council spokesman Carl Shimbri in Amman, Jordan, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, Yemen's crisis has resulted in more than 2 million IDPs, a 20-fold increase over 2014. He calls it the forgotten conflict.
Yemen gets 25% of the global displacement figures caused by conflict. Immediately after Yemen, we have Syria, and followed by Iraq. Three countries in the Middle East, 50% of the total displacement by conflict is actually accounted for in the Middle East.
We're talking about internally displaced, so they're staying in their respective countries, but where are they going?
They are not crossing borders, mostly because they can't. They don't have the means, or the borders are closed. In the case of Yemen, there is a blockade which would actually make it even riskier for them to even try leaving the country because they will be shot at. They are looking for safety within their own countries. Now, we've seen just a few days ago inside Syria where there was an attack on a displacement camp. People who fled, precisely a few of these millions who are registered today on our report, they have been attacked directly, a direct hit on a displacement camp. So the reality is there is nowhere safe whenever there is a war. And we see the same in Yemen. Infrastructure, civilian infrastructure, hospitals, schools, camps for the displaced are under attack across the world, particularly in the Middle East, where this is the most raging factor that is causing internal displacement.
Of course, the Middle East is not the only place where there are millions of IDPs. You also have Africa, even Latin America.
We're focused mostly now on conflict and war, but the reality is there are also natural disasters displacing millions more. The total amount of people newly displaced last year alone goes up to 27.8 million. That is the combined population of New York City, London, Paris, and Cairo together. It's around 66,000 people abandoning their homes every day, only last year. The accumulative number at the end of last year was 40.8 million people internally displaced globally over several years. And that's the highest figure ever recorded. It's shocking, and it's a global figure of concern.
What do you hope will be done by individual countries or international organizations with the report that you've released?
There's no question that there is no solution that is military or even humanitarian in Syria, in Yemen, in Iraq. It is only a politically negotiated solution that leads to peace, long-term peace. All warring sides have to be involved, and the influencing countries that have influence, rather than fueling the flames as they've been doing, they should actually get their act together and stop the people with the guns on the ground.
Aside from the Middle East, the council said IDPs are most prevalent in Afghanistan, Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, South Sudan, Ukraine, and Colombia. More than 19 million IDPs were uprooted by disasters, with the highest numbers in India, China, and Nepal. And the report added a new category, those displaced by criminal violence, where an estimated 1 million IDPs were found in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico. With more on this story is our social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski, who has joined me here at the Anchor Desk. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what are they saying today in the cyber world about the internally displaced?
There's a lot of disbelief, I think, on social media. People are using the word crisis a lot and saying it's a global crisis and that they can't believe that the number is this high. We're also seeing the phrase the invisible ones used a lot, talking about these people that are kind of seen but not seen. They have a, you know, they are in these borders of these countries, but they really don't have a place to go. So I think this is sparking a conversation about the global attention on this issue and that there should be more of it, and hopefully there will be.
And then another big story today is the bombings that are going on in Iraq.
Yeah, according to the Associated Press now, 93 people have been killed in these bombings in Baghdad. Horrifying is the word here that we're seeing a lot. One thing I saw that was something we've talked about on the show in the past, the Facebook check-in feature. Now, this has been something that Facebook has activated when there's a terrorist attack or natural disaster for people to check in and click a button to tell their family and friends that they're okay. And it's invaluable when there's lacking of cell phone service or landline phones might be down. Well, somebody pointed out, they said, I didn't get a Facebook check-in and none of my friends got a Facebook check-in that are in Baghdad. Why didn't they use this during this terrorist attack?
Why didn't they?
That's a good question, and that might be something that they have to answer to, especially if social media jumps on this and starts to ask those questions. There have been questions in the past about when Facebook has and has not chosen to use this feature, and so that may very well be a question that they have to face in the coming days.
And then you have something you were going to tell us about, a celebrity, and Andrew's been making us wait.
I've been teasing
for
it for the our Facebook Live viewers that are watching. I said I wouldn't want to give it away till we went on air, but I think we have our first A-list celebrity named in the Panama Papers, and it's actress Emma Watson, known as Hermione Hermione Granger in the Harry Potter movies. So apparently her name has been linked to one of these offshore accounts. Now, she's gone through her publicist to say that she didn't do anything illegal. These accounts are legal. The only reason she set this up was for privacy, that it concealed her activities and her name, that she didn't want her name out there in the midst of all of her financial dealings. But there's a lot of social media reaction calling her a hypocrite, saying that she's someone who's supported human rights and reducing poverty, and she's doing something supposedly with these Panama Papers that flies in the face of that. So she's facing a lot of criticism on social media.
Okay, well, thank you, Andrew, for all that.
Thank you.
We invite our listeners to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Top of the news, nearly 41 million people are reported internally displaced around the world. At least 75 people are killed in Baghdad bombings. Amnesty International says over 140 dead in Nigeria military detention. Brazil's president is on the verge of suspension. Trump is struggling to win key Republican support in the United States. News, feature reports, and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA announces that it has verified the existence of 1,284 new planets beyond our own solar system. The U.S. Space Agency says it's the single largest finding of extrasolar planets or exoplanets so far. Eric Stofan, chief scientist at NASA headquarters in Washington, says that this finding more than doubles the number of confirmed planets from the Kepler Space Telescope. To verify the 1,284 exoplanets, NASA performed a statistical analysis on the July 2015 Kepler catalog of some 4,300 potential planet candidates. They also found that 1,327 of the candidates are probably planets, but don't quite meet the standards of verification and will need further study. The rest probably aren't planets at all, but represent some other astrophysical phenomena. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Turkey's first foreign military base in the Middle East has opened in Qatar to counter what officials called the same threats. For an explanation of that, we have correspondent Heather Murdoch on the line from Cairo. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Susan.
Say, what are the same threats? What's that mean?
Analysts say that Turkey and Qatar have two main shared threats. The first is that they are in this region relatively isolated. Both countries, primarily starting around the Arab Spring, have been supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. And a lot of Middle Eastern countries find that very offensive and are very angry. For example, in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has been called a terrorist organization. It's illegal, and they've banned Al Jazeera, which is Qatar's television network, because they say it's supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. So this isolation is one thing these two countries share. And also, like a lot of other countries in the Middle East, they also distrust Iran. So they have a shared distrust of Iran. Both Qatar and Turkey are supporting fighters in both Syria and Yemen that are fighting against Iran-backed militants.
What are Turkey and Qatar hoping to achieve by strengthening their military alliance?
Well, from the Turkish side, this being their first military base in the Middle East, it's prestige. And it's also money. It will avail them to defense spending in the Gulf, which is a very lucrative game. On the Qatar side, Qatar does feel that it's some of its neighbors, like Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most powerful countries in the region, doesn't entirely respect their sovereignty. They want to be protected. So besides basic protection, they also have a history of foreign relations in which they ally themselves with various large powers and play them off of each other. So bringing Turkey into their defense plan will give them another large, powerful country that has a vested interest in keeping Qatar sovereign and secure and successful.
Meanwhile, Qatar is also home to the largest U.S. military base in the Middle East. How does this fit into the regional equation?
Well, traditionally, Qatar has felt safe and secure from any powerful neighbors because of this base. There is a perception, whether it's true or not, but there is definitely a strong perception in Gulf countries that as the U.S. Improves its relationship with Iran after the Iran nuclear deal, the U.S. might lose interest in protecting its Arab neighbors in the Middle East. So with that perception, it would make sense that Qatar would be looking to other countries to expand their defense.
Well, thank you very much, Heather, for speaking with us today from our Middle East Bureau in Cairo.
Thank you.
Coming up on International Edition, bullying, a major public health problem, and a new song from a singer who's been out of the picture for a while. Bullying is not a natural part of growing up and should be recognized as a major public health problem with consequences lasting far beyond childhood. That is the conclusion of experts in a new report by the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. The lead author of the report and the chairman of the committee that conducted the study is Professor Frederick Rivera, and he joins us on the line. Welcome, Professor.
Thanks very much.
First of all, if you could tell us, what did you find?
Well, we found that bullying is really a very common problem, that it occurs in as many as a third of youth, and 15% of youth are subject to cyberbullying. But among subgroups of the population, for example, youth who are LGBT, youth with disabilities such as autism, transgender youth with obesity, have much, much higher rates of bullying than the general population. As you also said in your opening statement, is that bullying has both short-term and long-term consequences. Somatic symptoms such as headache, abdominal pain, lack of sleep, but also psychological consequences such as depression and anxiety and effects upon their academic performance. This is a problem which we've taken for granted for a long time, but the data indicates we should no longer do so.
And these can carry on well into their later lives.
Yes, the problems such as depression and anxiety can really affect them as adults as well. So our report really tries to bring the attention of the public, the communities, schools to this problem, and really lays out a strategy to combat it.
Well, does it seem that bullying has gotten worse in the age of technology?
I don't think it's gotten worse. That the technology, unfortunately, though, provides another venue, a 24/7 venue, that bullying can occur in.
And could you give me some examples of that?
Well, kids can be bullied on by texting on phones, by Twitter, on Facebook. And there's really no escape. And as we all know, things go viral and can be spread over an incredible number of people, which is very different than the traditional bullying in the in the schoolyard that may be just between one individual and one target and may be observed by a few people. In this case, that could be observed by hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Well, let's try to solve this. What can be done about the problem by parents?
Well, I think, first of all, parents really need to know that this can happen. And if they're seeing signs in their youth, such as not wanting to go to school, signs of depression and anxiety, they really need to ask, are you being bullied at school? And if so, to talk to the youth about reporting this to the teachers and the principals, for the parents to get involved with their PTA organizations to make sure that the schools have effective anti-bullying programs. And there are state and local laws that require schools to have evidence-based bullying prevention programs.
Well, let's get into that. What can schools do, and professors, what can they do to help combat bullying? Sometimes it's hard to even know about.
Well, I think that the most effective interventions that we reviewed are those that are multifaceted, that involve students and teachers, principals and bus drivers, that involve the parents and the whole community in the school to teach about pro-social behavior, to give students skills to combat bullying. We come down fairly strongly saying that zero tolerance policies where bullies are suspended or expelled from school really don't work, that they're counterproductive and they should be stopped and instead have in place more systematic, multifaceted school-based programs.
Well, thank you very much, Professor, for joining us today on the line.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Benjamin Alexander has autism and does not speak like 1 in 10 people with the disorder. But today, with the help of a laptop computer, he attends Tulane University in New Orleans. Educator Judy Nordoff led Ben to expressing himself with a keyboard.
And I could see in his eyes the intelligence that was trapped in that body. And I knew we had to find a way to get it out.
Ben is an English major, getting good grades. His father, Sam, helps him type and get to class. Ben's computer is his human voice.
I am not stupid as some people used to think.
For quite a while.
I am not stupid as some people used to think.
Ben's mother, Ellen, says she doesn't try to look too far into the future for her son.
10 years ago, I never would have imagined, or even 5 years ago, that Ben would have been at Tulane.
And what does Ben expect?
I am not the autism poster boy, but I hope that people will make the effort to allow us to be heard.
I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Justin Timberlake has a new single out, and to tell us all about it is Larry London of Border Crossings. He's joined me here in the studio. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, the wait is over.
Oh.
The wait is over. It's been 3 years since Justin Timberlake gave us any new music with his album, The 2020 Experience 2 of 2, and he's back now. But he's only back with a song on a film soundtrack. He's actually not releasing this as a part of any album he's on. On task to complete. He's right now doing music for movies and laying low, as he's been laying low since the birth of his son about a year ago, Silas Randall.
Is that why he's been out of the picture?
He took himself out of the picture to give more attention to his wife, Jessica Biel, who's an actress, and work on a family. And so now they've got a new addition. They've got a little baby boy at home. And now he's slowly getting back into the scene.
Well, I don't want that. I want him to come back full, 100%.
Full-blown Justin.
Well, he's goofed off long enough.
You'll have to wait. And by the way, he's the original Justin. You know, there may be another Justin in music now, but Justin Timberlake was the first Justin to pop onto the charts and have all the number ones and win all the Grammys. I'm referring to Bieber, of course. But the film is called Trolls.
I don't put the two of those Justins in the same room.
You don't put them in the same room?
No, no.
All right. the film is Trolls, which we all know growing up, troll dolls were kind of cute with the little
hairdo,
the blue
hair
that stuck straight out. Exactly.
Big feet.
And this is a DreamWorks animated film that's expected out in November. And so Justin is creating music and overseeing the music for the film. He's been given that task. He's also working on music for another film that he was commissioned to do recently, and he's been producing music for that film as well. So he's kind of working on music behind the scenes, and he's going to voice a character in the film Trolls. So this is all about the film Troll.
And the song is called Can't Stop the Feeling.
It's Can't Stop the Feeling, and Billboard magazine is saying this is a candidate for the Song of the Summer. Every year, Billboard identifies a few songs that they think, ooh, this is going to be the big hit of the summer. And this song is the first that they've come out and said, ooh, this one's on our list to watch. So it's brand new. It just came out, and it's moving its way up the charts.
But we have a copy. It's sizzling.
It's sizzling hot because we've got it, and we're going to play it. And this is a worldwide premiere.
I
got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that.
So tell me a little bit more about Justin. I mean, not that I don't already know every single thing there is to know about him.
Well, Justin Timberlake got his start as a very young lad in the Mickey Mouse Club. This was the second rendition, of course, not the one from the 50s, but he was in the Mickey Mouse Club along with Britney Spears. The two of them dated for a little while, and then he went off and joined one of the most popular and biggest-selling boy bands of all time, known as NSYNC. And then in about...
Everybody knows about NSYNC.
Everyone knows NSYNC. He decided in 2002 he'd had enough. He was going to be out of sync. He wanted to go into a solo album. He released Justified, which earned him 2 Grammys, and his solo career was off and running. He's never looked back. So as a solo artist, he's won so many awards, and he performed on a country music award show recently with Chris Stapleton, and they sang a country song together, and he sounded great. So a lot of people said, hey, I bet you Justin's working on a country album. But I think Justin's so talented, he can do any kind of music, any genre, and it would sound great. And so right now he's back with this song from Trolls.
Right. Now he can even do kids' music. Well, thank you very much, Larry, for stopping by, and we'll see you next week, hopefully.
It's my pleasure, Susan, as always, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
And I have this feeling in my body that it's about time to go home. If you would like to listen to today's program again, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States marks May 11th as Vietnam Human Rights Day to highlight our nation's support for promoting and protecting basic freedoms in that Southeast Asian nation. The U.S. and Vietnam recently concluded their 20th annual Human Rights Dialogue in Washington. The meeting covered a wide range of human rights issues this year, including the importance of continued progress on legal reform efforts, rule of law, freedom of expression and assembly, religious freedom, labor rights, disability rights, LGBTI rights, multilateral cooperation, as well as individual cases of concern. U.S. Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, told the press that over the last year there was a continued overall decline in arrests and convictions for those peacefully expressing their religious and political views in Vietnam. However, Assistant Secretary Malinowski expressed concern about the recent uptick in convictions for peaceful dissent. He said the United States expressed our hope that this would be addressed and that some of the long-standing cases of concern would be resolved. Among the individual cases raised by the United States was Nguyen Van Dai, a prominent human rights lawyer who was arrested in December on charges of spreading anti-state propaganda. In 2007, Dai was sentenced to 4 years on a similar charge. Another high-profile case is that of blogger Nguyen Hu Vinh, who was sentenced to 5 years in prison in March for what authorities called abusing rights to freedom and democracy to infringe upon the interests of the state. During the last week in March, Vietnam convicted a total of 7 activists. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report at the end of 2015, Vietnam still held around 100 political prisoners. The United States continues to call for the unconditional release of all prisoners of conscience. Assistant Secretary Malinowski noted that the United States also continues to follow Vietnam's progress on legal reform necessary to bring Vietnamese laws in step with Vietnam's own constitution and international commitments. Vietnam's National Assembly is due this year to take up key laws, including the law on association, law on demonstrations, and law on religion, all of which could have a profound impact on human rights. Concern for the basic human rights of the Vietnamese people remains an integral part of the U.S.-Vietnam relationship.
That was an editorial.